Hey everyone, welcome to the Murder Records Podcast. I'm Jay Ferguson. Thanks for tuning in on this episode, part two of my chat with my cohort, Chris Murphy, regarding the 7-inch vinyl singles released on Sloan's label, Murder Records, during the 1990s, that are all, by the way, finally available in digital form over on the Murder Bandcamp page. Now, if you didn't listen to part one, you may want to go catch up first. In the second half of our discussion, we'll dig into the releases by Zampano, Thrush Hermit, The Local Rabbits, The Inbreds, The Certain Someones, and more Sloan. Okay, so moving along, the next 7-inch single that came out on Murder Records was a little further afield than Montreal, where the Local Rabbits were from. This one went all the way to Vancouver and a band called Zampano. And I feel like the first time I saw Zampano, who, by the way, were already on Sub Pop Records, and I think they might have beat Eric's Trip and Hardship Post and those bands to the label. I'm not 100% sure, but... Anyhow, I remember seeing them at the Crocodile in Seattle, and they performed All By Myself by Eric Carmen, basically at the height of grunge, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Anyhow, I thought they were fantastic, and I think I met them again at the one of the Halifax Pop Explosions, so I feel like I had talked to Carl a couple of times, and I don't know, do you remember meeting them or seeing them for the first time? I don't know who initiated this single. It might have been me, but I'm not 100% sure.
I don't really remember them. Like, if you saw them in Seattle, I must have been there. Was I there too? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the joke could be that, you know, Sub Pop stole a few of our artists, so we were trying to steal one back. right. They were already signed, as you say, at the height of grunge, like, you know, paying tribute to the Zombies and Burt Bacharach. More than
Definitely.
Nirvana, say.
Yeah.
And they
sure.
were just another of these bands, like the Local Rabbits, that really, I think, kind of upped Sloan's musical game for sure, and just more people who did not see the world through the lens of punk. And I just always associated people who didn't see... I guess I didn't know too many bands who were playing originals who didn't see the world through the eyes of punk. To me, it's almost like you were either punk or you were in a cover band. But these guys were writing original music that was, you know, this like heavy-duty pop music with arrangements that, you know, I joked on the Murder Records Instagram that owed more to, you know, more than to Burt Bacharach than, say, like Yngwie Malmsteen or something. It's like their ability to play, it wasn't like they were just like these shredders or something.
Yes.
They were just like accomplished writers and singers. It was informative to me, and I was happy to meet them. And they also played at the you know, the Edgefest 3 show that we spoke about earlier with regards to the Edgefest single that we did in August 95.
Yeah.
And I feel like everybody, all of our contemporaries definitely gathered to watch Zampano, and they kind of blew everyone away. They were doing, you know, they kind of did the Suits thing that's, you know, I don't think that influenced us, not me.
Right.
But their musicality, like, I think that our whole gang was pretty inspired by Zampano, for sure.
For sure.
I'm really glad we were able to do this, that Sub Pop was cool enough to let us do this single.
Definitely. I'm really glad that we're able to do it. I feel like even for me, with a song like Junior Panthers on One Chord to Another, was probably influenced from either listening to Zampano or even, I feel like at one of the Pop Explosions when Zampano played, and I remember talking to Carl Newman, and I feel like there was all kinds of music that he knew about that I felt like I was a music guy and was really into records, but I really at that point didn't know my Burt Bacharach or like Dionne Warwick or Jimmy Webb and or The Association and stuff like that. He was just telling me about all these songs I should listen to, and I went back and sought them out, and I thought they sort of influenced a little bit in songwriting, and also like a bunch of new records to listen to pull ideas from. And I remember when so we reached out, and I'm really glad that they, like you said, that Sub Pop allowed them and us to put out this 7-inch single. And the A side is called "The Only Reason Under the Sun." And once again, when the tapes arrived at Murder Records, I couldn't believe it. Like, I loved the song from the moment I heard it. I couldn't believe it. And they also had the guts to record a cover of "The Long and Winding Road" for the B-side, which was pretty bold. And the song itself, "The Only Reason Under the Sun," was this would have been released between their first album and their second album. And I think they re-recorded that song for the with a little bit higher production value for the second Zampano record, but I must admit I prefer this version and this recording, and I'm just really happy that they let us do this. The sleeve. So this would have been some Murphy design work, which I really like because they sent some artwork, which I had not seen in ages. But you posted about it on the Murder Records Instagram, and I remember seeing that artwork at the time, but I completely forgot about it.
Looked at it now, I'm embarrassed that they sent it, and I was like, no, we're not going to use that. This is horrible.
I was feeling the same way too. I was kind of like, I didn't
know. Sure, but I mean, now I kind of feel like, why didn't we just do what they wanted? Like, that, what a sort of goofball move. I mean, I don't really regret it. Like, I think it's fine. Like, the thing is, a Joseph Mueller Brockman, the sort of Swiss graphic design artist, you know, I kind of just like aped something that he did.
Yeah.
But it looks cool. But whatever. I do feel like a bit of a control freak having done that. So I feel kind of bad. And when I was looking into trying to get all of these songs onto a Murder Records Bandcamp page,
yeah,
I reached out to everybody and I heard back from everybody, and including Carl Newman. I was happy to hear from him. Carl Newman, by the way, if we haven't said already, has gone on to be in New Pornographers,
yeah,
who are just like a fantastic band with a great body of work. Like, they've done great stuff. And Carl continues to make solo records as well as AC Newman. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was happy to hear from him. And he was like, yeah, go for it. And whatever. He's a guy that I'm happy to know. He's just gone on to do such great things. And just another of these guys that we've known for so long. I don't see him on a regular basis, but happy to know him. He's great.
The next Murder Records 7-inch single was by our band Sloan, and it's technically not really titled, it's untitled, but known as the Rhodes Jam, and there was only 500 copies of this made in a white, blank white sleeve on white vinyl and blank white labels with only a little, I don't know, what would you call it, like that stamp letterpress kind of thing?
Like an embossing, just a sort of emboss machine,
yeah,
device,
yeah, a little like embossed label, I guess, on the artwork that just indicates the number and the label and the year 1997. So I think this single was
how many copies do you have?
I think I have three kicking around here. Do you have any?
I have two.
Okay, good. Okay, so I
on. But one of them is kind of water damaged.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the other one seems pretty pristine.
Okay, good. I think one of mine might be the, I don't know, the test pressing or something like that. But the the recording itself, if you've not heard it before, is not really a song. It's more like a jam on one chord, and it was a little bit of an initiative by me, I think inspired a little bit by Stereolab, who often when they went on tour, they would manufacture a single, 7-inch single, that they would sell only at the merch table. And so over the years, they've accumulated this series of tour singles that I think is a nice little series. And I think this was a little bit of an homage to that. And musically, it was a little bit of homage to them and probably music that they were into, which would have been, you know, a lot of the German bands that would have been like Neu and Can and things like that. And so this recording is basically recorded live off the floor. And it includes Chris, you're on drums. Ian McGettigan from Thresh Hermit is playing bass. Patrick is playing percussion, or tambourine. I think I'm playing electric guitar. And it's mainly a highlight for, once again, for Andrew's sort of solo Fender Rhodes keyboard playing. And it might even be a Wurlitzer, it sounds like, in there, but I'm not sure. It might be the Rhodes, I forget. But right. Anyhow, it, you know, definitely we could have released a single like Stood Up, like a couple of more formally structured songs, but I kind of thought that this was just like a fun experiment that would not necessarily broaden our horizons, but it's just like another weird thing to put just to put other things in context so that we just, you know, you're just not known as this one thing. I just thought it was a fun little idea. But I think if people, if this was their gateway to Sloan, they'd be like, what the hell is this?
Well, I listened to it last night. I don't think I've listened to it in a long time. I liked it. Like, I kind of thought, when I thought about it, historically, I always just thought it was kind of just like sort of junk or something. But it's cool. It sounds cool.
Yeah.
And there is that whole sort of vocal bit that you did,
right?
And
yep.
I don't think any of that was that. Had we planned this is where the vocals are going to go, or you said, "Oh, here's some space, I can do it here."
It was definitely like, where is there any space to sing anything? Because I think it was just done, recorded live off the floor, and I assumed, thinking like, I bet you we can just jam some vocals in somewhere, and there's not a lot of space for them, but yeah, we put them in. In one part where I sing a little bit, and then I think you're singing maybe with someone else the little ba-ba, the ba-ba's afterwards.
Okay.
That would have been done at Idea of East, where we had recorded one chord to another in Halifax. That's where we put the vocals.
Is that
on.
Where we did that?
Well, just
you
the
think
vocal
we did
part.
That there?
The vocal part,
oh,
but the,
yeah.
The actual the bed track of all the music was done, I think, at our practice space.
Just in a practice
that's
space.
Right.
That's what I'm picturing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
We were all just jammed in, and it was, you know, a few microphones, four microphones, and, you know, one take basically. But I do find that Andrew's playing is cool, and it's a.
Oh, I do
thing.
Too. I think yeah. It's a cool sounding thing. And the other thing is, you know, it's just like side A and side B. It's just like side A fades out and then side B kind of fades in. I kind of was thinking that it would just be like almost a continuation, but it's definitely down the road. Like, it's going berserk when side B starts.
It's true. So I think there was a chunk edited out. It's like, oh my God, where
it
do
must,
we come back
just,
in?
Well, then I was just thinking, like, how long was that jam?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Was it 10 minutes?
Yeah, it could very well have been. Anyhow.
Can I just say a tangential thing?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
just about, you know, I don't know that much about Neu, who'd be like a big influence on Stereolab. I also loved Stereolab.
Yeah.
But I also got into... I just want to say that in 1990 or so, I went to a party with Andrew. I think it must have been a Halloween party. I had Gene Simmons makeup on and a mini skirt on. I don't know. Like, I went there and people didn't know who I was. And then it was at these art students, Iris and Elmar, like Elmar Dutchie Schwartz.
Yeah.
Iris and Elmar, these German exchange students who were older and went to NASCAD, the art college.
Right.
And they played... Cannes delayed 1968.
Right.
And people were just dancing. It was just an art school thing. And I was just dressed as this weirdo and nobody knew who I was. It was just, it was crazy. Like, I don't know. Anyway, I was really blown away by Cannes. Like,
Sure.
And that was kind of like, that's Malcolm Mooney Cannes. Like, that's kind of outside Cannes.
That's right.
Anyway, that's, that was kind of my introduction.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
My introduction. But anyway, I loved it a lot. But anyway, that doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but some of that stuff is pretty kind of like one chord jams as well.
Definitely. Anyway. And I would definitely have never, I got into Cannes because of that party, because of you basically. So, I didn't know anything about it. And I remember at the time, I think I was working at Discord Records I wasn't in university anymore. I was just done university and I was working there. And I remember a copy of Delay 1968 came in and I remember buying it. As a result, like you had either, I probably had taped it from you or heard about it from you. And then ended up getting other Cannes records, but I would not have known them unless it was those, you know, unless those students had had that party and played it for you. So,
well, I think of a lot of your music as being influenced by Pnoum.
Yeah. Is that the one with, like, it sounds like a pile of bricks just went down the thing of stairs? Yes. Or whatever? Yeah.
There's some saxophone squawking and then just like an explosion. Yeah. Yeah, a pile of bricks.
That's amazing.
The Rhodes Jam, I also think, like, was that recorded in early 97, do you think?
Yeah, it would have been recorded because I remember we were all around. I hadn't moved to Toronto just yet, but I've been going there a little more frequently. And we were all home because the East Coast Music Awards was happening in Moncton, New Brunswick. And I remember taking the train up to Moncton to go. And so we were all back. And I think
so this is like February.
Yeah, so
probably,
it was like
February 97.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's when we would have recorded this, the Rose.
Because I was thinking, you know, we recorded the Party album probably in November 96.
Yes, yeah.
But there were no new songs on that, and we recorded One Chord to Another. You know, Andrew played all those drums basically in one day, and then we kind of recorded it without him, and then he recorded his songs without us. So I just mean it was kind of a cathartic jam in my mind. It was like the first kind of new direction or new thing that we kind of did all together in quite a while.
Right, yeah, yeah. So moving on, the next single is the first single, or the first 7-inch single that we would have released, I guess technically, on their own by Threshermit. They had, by this point, they had released two CD EPs, Smart Bomb and The Great Pacific Ocean, on Murder Records. But they had been doing a lot of one-off 7-inch singles for different labels, sort of basically, it seemed like holding off signing to a major label that, you know, they had been getting... I think they've been getting different offers and they're probably holding out for the best scenario for them. But in the meantime, they were doing a lot of 7-inch singles. And then this is one that they did for us. And it's one of my favorite Rob Benvey songs for sure. Giddy with the Drugs, the A-side, I think is a great one. And I like the Ugly Details, Joel's song on the other side. But anyhow, what
My observation was just that it's almost as if... Yeah, because I do think that Giddy with the Drugs is the superior song of the two. I mean, I don't mean to say what's the A side, and I don't even know if it says. It doesn't matter.
Oh, right. Okay. But yeah, maybe you're right.
But again, but as you know, it's almost as if Murder Records had a strictly Rob Benvey only singles like rule.
Right.
It's like
yeah.
You know, French Inhale from Smart Bomb and Patriot from Great Pacific Ocean, and then Giddy with the Drugs. You know, Joel might have wondered to himself, what's wrong with me?
What the hell is going on here? Like, why?
Yeah, I wrote All Dressed Up on, you know, when I was 17 years old.
Yeah.
Anyway, he definitely had some great songs too. I was going to talk about how Threshermit seemed to be kind of like treading water, waiting for this perfect opportunity or whatever it was that was going on. And, you know, they finally had a record come out in February 1987 on Elektra, that Sweet Home record. And I was like, yeah, they waited so long. But at the same time, I think they turned 22 that year. So I think they were
crazy. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it really did them that big a disservice. Yeah, so this is a nice document between Sweet Home Record and Clayton Park. I think that Sweet Home Record was recorded in May 96. I was always kind of sad about the fact that Murder Records really stopped being an avenue for other bands other than Sloan around 1998. And Thrush Hermit, when they were off Elektra and they needed a place to go, you know, we weren't there for them. Not that they were necessarily going to go with us, but whatever. I just mean, like, we weren't really in a position to do anything. And they went to Sonic Onion, who did a great job with their Clayton Park record.
Right.
But I always say it kind of broke my heart that we couldn't have released that record or, you know, This Is It, Here We Go by the Local Rabbits.
Yes.
Or the... Were the Changes by the Flashing Lights. Like, we were sort of no longer there for them.
Right.
For that purpose.
Yeah.
And my joke about it was seeing Thrush Hermit, Clayton Park on Sonic Onion was like seeing Bobby Orr on the Chicago Blackhawks.
Totally. Or Wayne Gretzky on the New York Rangers. Like, what? That makes no sense. That's not him. That's a very good analogy. So the other thing about this Thrush Hermit single is the involved artwork, and I feel like it was right around this time that I started not losing touch with Murder Records, but I was spending more time in Toronto and I was getting ready to move there, and I was probably less involved with the day to day, and I don't remember this sleeve being put together, but it says like it's by a guy named John Dacey. And do you know more about the sleeve? It's very involved. It's got like an illustration on the cover. It's in nice heavy cardboard
is it silkscreen?
Silver ink. It looks like a silkscreen job and then glued together. And it's got a gate, like a double gatefold in the back that reveals like an inverted photo of them with all the credits. It's great. Like, it's a nice little,
It's cool.
It's much nicer than a lot of the other, as far as just the assembly, it's nicer than a lot of the Murder Record sleeves, which were just often a piece of paper folded together, which was the sort of the mode of the day that was spearheaded kind of by Sub Pop. But this one has just got a little bit more heft to it or whatever. But do you remember much about this sleeve or anything like that at the time?
I don't. When I think of it, I think of it as something that doesn't fold together very well. But like at the same time, it's more like it's more crafty. Like it's definitely not made by Ross Ellis. It's not, you know, it's handmade and cooler for it.
Yeah.
Mine, you know, I have one jammed into a, the single here. I have a couple loose, but I have a couple of extra artworks. But it was a cool. I think it was a. Again, I'm glad that we were able to do that with Thrush Hermit. And I think they probably just paid for all of that stuff themselves. Like, I think that's just their own initiative.
I think so,
for the most part.
Yeah, I think so, too. No, so I'm glad it exists.
Thank you for allowing us to put it out. The eye for the ugly.
So the Inbreds, who were a band from Kingston, Ontario, and had already started, you know, releasing records on their own PF label, had ended up, you know, kind of moving to Halifax. Maybe you know the story a little bit better than I do, but they their second LP that they had, you know, released on their own on PF, they were being courted by Atlantic Records, or the Atlantic subsidiary called TAG, in around 1995. And right around that same time, the duo of Dave Ulrich and Mike O'Neill had moved to Halifax. And I guess once the deal with Atlantic sort of, you know, that didn't really work out, or TAG kind of went under, then Murder Records ended up being a home for the Inbreds. Do you know more about that story than I do? I feel like
they were managed by the same guy, as they were managed by Chip Sutherland. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were all buddies. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how it would have affected, you know, someone like Dave Ulrich, who they had their own label. They had PF.
That's right.
And but whatever. I think that their inclusion on Murder Records officially makes it, when you add up all of the people on the roster, it's just like an untouchably great roster. You know, we can't really say that. I mean, Combinator did come out on Murder Records, not originally, but whatever. They're in the family. And the Inbreds, they were a two-piece. Mike just played bass, played all the chords on sort of distorted bass, and Dave played drums. And their records are fantastic. Like, I feel like they're one of the great groups of the 90s. Like, I don't feel like it suffers from 90s production as much as some records. Like, I love listening to those recordings. They're great. Mike is such a great singer too.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So the first that mustache song that's on the single,
on the 7-inch,
I think
single,
it says that it was recorded by Lincoln Fong, who produced Sydney or the Bush.
That's correct. So that was the record that sort of came out on Murder Records, but I think that was the record that was originally being funded by Atlantic and Tag, but didn't come out.
Yes,
Tag.
And they lost their funding for halfway through, kind of thing. But I just wonder why it didn't get on the record. Mm-hmm. No, it was reworked and it was on Winning Hearts. There's a version of this song on Winning Hearts.
That's right, yep.
And it's a reworked version. But this version that was recorded with Lincoln Fong is more kind of standard. It sort of felt like it could have been on Combinator, for example.
Yep.
And maybe they felt it was kind of too retrograde or something for them at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it was too much of a throwback. Mike had a lot on his plate. He was the only writer.
Yeah.
And I think I did the math. It's like between their three official releases and Hilario, their kind of incesticide of sort of like extra tracks, Mike wrote and recorded 59 songs in 5 years.
Right. That's a lot of work.
And by comparison, I, Chris Murphy, am the quantity guy in Sloan. And in that amount of time, I wrote 25 songs. So he wrote more than twice what I just don't know how he did it.
Sure, that's a lot of pressure too, especially if you're just like, hey, just got signed to Atlantic, you know, okay, now make an album, basically. I'm sure that's a lot on one's
shoulders. With, I can almost hear Chip saying, make another, boys. You know, yeah, that didn't work out. Yeah, make another one.
Right, yeah, no
but,
problem.
You know, with Sloan, we had the four of us able to sort of help us, you know, deal with that messaging. Just make another one. Like, it's always kind of, you put your heart into it and it's just like, oh, that didn't work out.
The
artwork on this, or do we talk about, what's the other song on this?
Oh, Mustache, the other song is
Reason Why I'm Shy. Oh, it's just like a Mike playing guitar.
Mike
it's
playing
like a
guitar.
Nice little,
yeah, it's a demo version, I guess, technically.
Yeah,
of that song. Which, now, was that song on Is Sydney of the Bush?
I forget which record that's on.
Yes, that eventually did end up on a record with full production. But I do quite like this demo version, which I think is a nice addition to the single. But yeah, you're going to say about the artwork. It's called, I mean, the song is called Mustache, and it has on the back like a little. Have you actually tried to work out the whole little sort of Zeppelin III pinwheel style? Okay, you have, so you can tell us more about it.
Well, there's like a little, it's a pinwheel, yeah, a la Zeppelin III, where you get a little, what do you call those? Like a little fastener.
Yeah, that little tab. I don't know.
Yeah, like a paper fastener, yeah. And then you know, there's like this. It comes with instructions. It's like, you know, you have to cut a hole with a utility knife and use the paper fastener. I don't know how many people actually tried to do this.
Yeah.
But there's a little rotating piece of paper that you're supposed to put in there, and then different mustaches, four different mustaches, will appear depending on how you spin it.
Yeah.
But the thing was done on the flimsiest paper, so like I don't think it was as effective as Zeppelin III.
Yes, not as robust as Zeppelin III. I think you're right.
No. But a cool idea, and whatever, like I gotta hand it to them for trying something outrageous like that. And that's also to be credited to Jenny San Martin, who did a lot, if not all, of the Inbred's artwork.
That's right, yeah. I think she also did the illustration on the front, which I always, when I quickly look at it, I assume, but I don't think it's Buster Keaton, but I often think it's Buster Keaton. But maybe it's right. A combination of Buster
on
Keaton
right.
And Pee Wee Herman.
On the right.
I can't even decide. Sure. But anyhow, yeah, no, that's a... I'm happy that... once again, I think that's the only Inbred's 7-inch single that... that Murder Records have released. And kind of like Thrushermit, they had been doing a lot of one-off singles for a variety of labels and a lot of sort of split singles and things like that. But anyhow, I'm glad that we had one on Murder.
The clouds seemed as though time was standing still. It dragged me on against my will. But I know these feelings soon will fade. And that's the reason that I'm shy. I know I've often asked too much. When I think nobody's listening, I know I've often asked too much. When I think nobody's listening.
Okay, so the next single in the catalog is another one of my favorites. It's by Local Rabbits. And it's two songs. One of them on the B-side, called Pops and Company, had originally appeared on You Can't Touch This, the first Local Rabbits record. And this would have been released in between their first record and their second, which was called Basic Concept. The Pops and Company is called the disco version on this. And the A-side, which is fantastic, it's called British Knights Coalition, Consolidate and Strike, in brackets, Stomp Your BKs Down. It's basically an homage or a rallying cry to all of the heavy metal fans who were probably feeling like they were being overrun by glam metal, or as Ben puts it, I think, pussy rock on in this. I think, is that what he says in the lyrics? Anyhow, the lyrics are printed on the sleeve, and it's on wonderful gold vinyl like their other single was, but I'm glad that we got to... release this as a single, because they did re-record it for Basic Concept, but I think this recording is fantastic. Do you
my apology, because they sent the lyrics to me to make the right. sleeve, and I went through the spelling and changed deicide to decide
right.
because I didn't know
You didn't.
What
you weren't up on your metal.
Was.
Yes, you weren't on your metal.
It's a term, I guess, outside of the band. I guess killing a god. I just don't use it that much. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I didn't know deicide. Anyway, I'm forever embarrassed of that. I spell checked deicide to decide.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it's cool concept to have just the lyrics printed in silver on black. It looks really sharp.
It does.
And the lyrics to both songs are fantastic, as usual, from those guys.
Just because they read so well on British Knights Coalition, Stomp Your BKs Down, I'm just going to read one of the verses, because the lyrics, this is a Ben Gunning song. Both songs are Ben Gunning songs. But yeah, the one that mentions deicide is, hats off to the pointy guitars, the bloody logos and five-pointed stars. Crank up parental wince-inducing riffs. To heavy metal, may I send my regards. To Slayer, Metal Church, and Deicide. Not decide, to Carcass, Venom, Death, and Sacred Reich. To Nuclear Assault and Napalm Death. Your fans are bailing, and it just isn't right. How can you let this happen without a fight? It's pretty amazing. It's fantastic.
It's unbelievable.
Right.
It's so good.
Right.
Can you love?
great wild guitar playing between Ben and Pete at the end. So this song, and then the B-side, Pops and Company, which is sort of a song about, I think, about like fans who maybe cross the line, and you know, once they meet somebody in a band or an artist that they like, maybe feel that they know them a little too well. And I think Ben does a very good job sort of illustrating that in the lyrics to Pops and Company. But these would have been recorded at first. I didn't know if they were just demos for the next record, but I think on the Murder Records Instagram account, I thought that Pete might have said these were just, they knew they wanted to do a 7-inch single, so they recorded a bunch of new songs and then chose a couple of them. But as you know, British Night or Stomp Your BKs Down eventually did end up on Basic Concept. But it's once again super musical. And
the other thing about this single, yeah, it's the introduction of Jason Tustin.
Yes,
I think it's the first thing he plays on.
Oh, right. Okay. Yep.
So it had been You Can't Touch This was Brian Waters on the drums, and then Jason Tustin plays on Basic Concept, but this came out just before that, so this is the sort of introduction to him.
Yeah, definitely.
So whatever, I love Brian Waters, but Tustin was pretty fun. Yep. Too cool drummer.
So I guess technically the Local Rabbits, that Local Rabbits single was the last really of the 90s 7-inch singles that Murder Records released. But in 2013, we kind of thought it'd be fun to maybe make a little sort of a 7x7 booklet that was a compendium to like a download, a digital download of all those songs that, you know, were unavailable at the time, unless you just had the 7-inch single. I think the initiative, I think, Chris, you designed the book, and it's also full of Catherine's wonderful photos of all the bands that put out a 7-inch single on Murder Records. And it was released in the summer of 2013, and along with the booklet, we included a brand new single that I guess was recorded in the 90s but never came out at the time, and it's called The Certain Someones, and it's you, Chris, Matt Murphy, and Jenny Pierce. So when you did these recordings, what was the initiative, or do you remember when they were done? Were they done just for fun, or did you think you were going to release it?
I'm sort of guessing it's 1997. Yep. I know that Jennifer was moving away.
And she was in jail, by the way. And I'm not sure if everybody
knows. That's right, Jennifer Pierce, and she sang on our first record and on Peppermint too. But yeah, she was moving to New York or whatever, and Matt and I and Jennifer just thought it would be kind of fun to make a recording together as a kind of commemorative thing. And the song is kind of Certain Someone's, I forget which one is which, yeah. It's kind of about her moving away.
Right, yeah.
Certain Someone's, the first song, yeah, is about her moving away, or it's about like our, it's like this song about our friendship, and it's super cloying, and in a sort of joking way, it's in radical stereo, which is kind of fun, like the drums are really in one ear, but you know, it's got these goofy lines where it's like Matt says he's her best friend, and then I say she's mine, and Jennifer says and I'm his, and then we say our, she calls herself Lynn Flamingo. Her middle name is Lynn, and she grew up on Flamingo. And then Matthew is Macaulay Towers. Yeah. He grew up on Tower Road, and I'm Michael Clayton Park. Anyway, just goofball stuff. And we even say, you know, we're going to be driving somewhere smiling or whatever, and sing probably in three-part harmony,
right,
or singing happily in three-part harmony, but we say that in three-part
right,
harmony.
Yeah.
Like, it's just punch in the face. But we knew
decidedly
we were just doing
un-punk.
That for fun.
Yeah. Yeah, not terribly punk.
Very unpunk, yeah. But the other, it's kind of actually the song reminds me of "Glad All Over." Who sings "Glad All Over"?
Like the '60s song, you mean? Yeah, that would be the Dave Clark Five did that. Yeah,
Yeah, Dave Glover. It's kind of, it's like, because we're the dun, dun, certain, so it's kind of like dun, dun, glad all over.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's great.
And the other song is called Sad Salvation, which is probably the more exciting listen. It's basically just kind of like the Who can't explain kind of thing.
Yep.
And it's got, I didn't really know my Elvis Costello, but I think Sad Salvation, like Radio has the line, Radio is a sound salvation, I
yes,
think.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Something. Yep. But there's like, there's great singing on it and cool playing and... The whole thing was just, and then we recorded it at Idea of East with Lawrence Curry.
Yeah.
And then it was just on a DAT tape, and then I forgot about it. Like, I hadn't heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear it until we did that, the single compilation in 2013.
It's,
but anyway, it turned out cool. I think we just attributed a name to us, certain someone's. We didn't have a band, and we didn't play anywhere.
Yeah.
It was just a fun one-off recording, and it was a this was a fun opportunity to sort of highlight these songs. I thought they turned out pretty cool, and
I think they're great. Like, yeah, they're a great recording.
Nice little picture of us, the three of us on the label.
Yep.
I've got a mustache, so that's the time. Do you remember I did? There's a Sloan show I did with the mustache. That's at the McGinnis
room.
That's
right. Yeah,
I remember those pictures.
We're sort of mocking up the back of Zeppelin One, kind of.
And we did the Zeppelin One thing there. So it's whenever that time is, probably. Anyway, that's a picture of the three of us in Park Lane Theater. I don't know what we're doing, watching Batman or something.
Not DC Cab. It's a little too late for DC Cab, I guess. Yeah. But this is, I think it's also, it just ties everything in nicely because Matt and Jenny were also very part of, you know, a part of Murder Records and a part of the scene and whatever. Not, I mean, beyond your friendship of doing it together, it's just kind of, it ties the whole package together.
Yeah, we're all kind of alums.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's great. And I was really glad that there was something new and interesting from the 90s that we could include with the booklet and the download.
Yeah. So did you say like it was a 7-inch that came with the
That's
book?
Right.
Yeah. You said
yeah.
that. Sorry.
Yeah, so yeah, came of the 7-inch was in the back of the booklet, and so anyhow, so we manufactured that in 2013, and it came with a download of all of the Murder Records singles, including the those two Certain Someone's tracks, and you know, I think we made 500 of those booklets. There might be still a couple kicking around, but once again, that was the only place to really hear that music. We didn't have it on iTunes or any streaming services or anything like that. So it's kind of fun now to be able to make it a little more widely available through the Murder Records Bandcamp that you've been setting up. And this is sort of I guess you put out the Matthew Grimson record, and there's going to be a Tons record coming, but this is almost a little bit of a inaugural archive release that we'll be putting on the Murder Records Bandcamp.
Yep. And I want to thank everybody from the bands when I reached out to them, and they were all really cool about the terms or whatever. It's like, we'll just be... we're not going to make a lot of money, but everybody's cool about it. I'll just keep track of it, and I'll send you some if there's any.
That's a great one. Sad Salvation by Chris, Matt Murphy, and Jenny Pierce, also known as the Certain Someones. Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that if you want to hear all of the singles released on Murder Records from 1993 to 1998, please head over to murderrecords1.bandcamp.com to listen or to purchase them. Anyhow, all right, we'll see you again next time. Take care and stay safe.